The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What's up, everybody? Happy Friday. Junkies back with you live on 106.7 The Fan and the Team 980 here in the DMV. 910 The Fan, 105.1 FM in Richmond. We are streaming live on the free Odyssey app, and you can watch us on the Monumental Sports Network, brought to you by Crop Metcalf. They're the official heating and cooling company of the Junkies. Looking to be their next five-star HVAC technician or plumber? Just visit cropmetcalf.com to join their team today. We thank you for tuning in this Friday morning, December 27th, 2024. I'm John Paul Flame, joined by Jason Bishop.
Good morning.
Good morning. Got the boys behind the glass. Valdez is here. Mike Marr is here.
Mike Marr's back. Mike Marr took the day off yesterday.
It's a football Friday, Jason Bishop. We will preview Commanders v. Falcons on the show today.
It's kind of a biggie.
But we are chock full of guests. Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to talk movies with Kevin McCarthy.
Yep.
I'm told there's a new Nicole Kidman movie.
Mm-hmm.
There's the Bob Dylan movie.
Yep.
And I think he's got a third movie to talk about. So we'll talk to Kevin about the movies coming up at 7 if you're thinking about going to the theaters. Chris Doering's going to join us because we got a bunch of college football games, quarterfinals coming up. So we'll talk to Chris Doering about those four games. It's a Friday. That means John Feinstein joins us.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Georgetown's been playing good basketball. So we've got their head coach, Ed Cooley, joining us at 8:20.
We're hitting all the locals. We had Caputo on from G-Dub. So we'll have to get Kenny Blakeney on. We'll have to get Dwayne Simpkins on. We'll have to get Kevin Willard on.
And Scott Abraham joins us, as he does on Fridays, to preview the Commanders game. Since you mentioned college basketball and we mentioned Cooley, big news yesterday, our friend, longtime friend of the show, had used to come in studio when we were in Fairfax, Jim Larrañaga, steps down at the University of Miami.
Mm-hmm.
Had a long run there. Of course, he took George Mason to the Final Four. That's his signature. But he also took Miami to the Final Four.
Yeah, two years ago.
It's a little strange when you retire, you know, at the start of a season, but I totally get it. I watched, and I think we have some audio here. Here's Jim Larrañaga in his presser explaining why he's stepping down at Miami.
I loved the game, and I loved the university that much. I felt like, okay, there's one thing you got to constantly ask yourself. Are you going to give everything you have the commitment that it deserves? 100% of yourself, physically, mentally, emotionally, but I'm exhausted. I've tried every which way to keep this going. And I know I'm going to be asked a lot of questions, but I want to answer them before I'm even asked. What shocked me beyond belief was after we made it to the Final Four just 18 months ago. The very first time I met with the players, eight of them decided they were going to put their name in the portal and leave.
I said, don't you like it yet? No, I love it. I love Miami. It's great. But the opportunity to make money someplace else created a situation that you have to begin to ask yourself as a coach, what is this all about? And the answer is it's become professional.
That's exactly what it's become. And there's a new kind of bylaw in NCAA sports where each team is technically going to have a revenue share, and each team will be able to spend about $22 million, or each school will be able to spend about $22 million on their players. Now, each school can kind of decide how much of that's going to go to basketball, how much of that's going to go to football, to baseball, etc. But he's 100% right. It's become a professional sport since NIL has started. And the fact that those kids all want to leave, it's just, especially for a 75-year-old coach who had really never dealt with that until a few years ago, I could see why he wanted it to go out. It kind of drove Jay Wright out. It kind of drove Roy Williams out. It kind of drove Mike Krzyzewski out.
Well, it's hard to build a program.
And it's hard.
When guys don't stay long. I can't remember which player it was.
Even in football, Saban.
I was looking at a roster of a college basketball team. It might have been even Georgetown, because I was looking at their stats last night.
Yeah, they got a lot of
there was a guy who had been on four teams.
Mm-hmm.
Four teams. I don't even get how they play 6 years. It was four teams in 6 years. I don't understand how the eligibility lasts that long.
Well, the COVID year was an extra year.
All right, COVID year, and then did they get a graduate school year? Like,
sure.
I mean,
you used to get 5 years to play four. Now, essentially, you get six to play five, but that'll end up... Well, now that the junior college thing, the judge ruled that the junior college doesn't count as to your eligibility, because Diego Pavia, who's the quarterback at Vanderbilt, played 2 years of junior college, and he sued the school because he said, no, that shouldn't count against my eligibility. So the judge said, you're right, so you get an extra year. He went to New Mexico State and then transferred to Vanderbilt. Now he's got an extra year. Who knows if he'll stay at Vanderbilt or if he'll jump to another school. But it's crazy. There's no structure anymore. And somehow the NCAA or the conferences have to create structure, because there's none right now.
And if you're an old school coach like Larry Nagy, look, he's 75 years old.
Yeah.
I mean, 75. Most coaches don't last to 75.
Correct.
You've been dealing with this for 40, 50 years coaching mm-hmm. a certain way mm-hmm. and recruiting a certain way. And everything has done an about face and changed.
Yeah.
You can't build a program like you used to. You used to build a program and you might develop talent for two or three seasons. And then all of a sudden they might shine as a junior or a senior.
Mm-hmm.
It's not happening anymore.
Doesn't happen.
Think about his George Mason team. I can't think of the names off the top of my head, but they were a veteran-laden team.
Yeah,
which
of course,
is,
he recruited those guys.
You used to see that in college basketball in the tournament, that some of the upsets, the Cinderella stories, were these senior-laden teams. And people were like, well, yeah, they've got a bunch of seniors. Well,
mm-hmm.
you're not really going to get that anymore.
No.
And if you're going to get the seniors, they're going to be seniors, but... their seniors are on their third or fourth team.
Yeah. I mean, just take, for example, a kid named Jalen Blackman, who is a senior at Miami this year playing for Coach Larrañaga. He's averaging 10 points a game. He's a pretty good player. He's shooting about 47%. He played at Grand Canyon University his freshman year. Then he transferred to Stetson, played at Stetson for 2 years, and then he transferred to Miami. So he's played at three schools in 4 years already. And that's just the type of thing you have to deal with as a coach. I mean, there are some other players on Miami's team. Nigel Pack, he went out and got Nigel Pack from Kansas State. Now, Pack's been there for a few years. In fact, I think Pack played on the Final Four team. But this is his fifth year. He went out and got Lynn Kidd from Virginia Tech. And I heard, and I don't know what's true and what's not, because you hear all these crazy numbers. I heard that Lynn Kidd got a substantial amount of money. And Lynn Kidd is an okay player, but, I mean, he's not like an All-American. And he got some stupid money to transfer from Virginia Tech to Miami. And then he went out and got this kid, Matt Cleveland. And Matt Cleveland has been on Miami a couple of years, but he went and got him from Florida State. So the top four scorers at Miami all started out at other schools. He didn't recruit any of them.
Yeah, it's just totally different.
It's a totally different sport, and that's just what you have to deal with now as a coach. And Bill Courtney's going to take over. Now, Bill Courtney is he's been a longtime coach. He's coached at pretty much all the local schools. He was at George Mason when Larrañaga was there. He coached at Virginia for a couple years. He was at Virginia Tech. He coached at Cornell. He was the head coach at Cornell. And then he joined Larrañaga at Miami. So he'll take over. I had heard in the summertime from a good friend who knows Courtney very well that Larrañaga was going to step down before the season started. And Courtney was going to kind of take over then as an interim guy, but maybe he'll get the job. I don't know.
Did you see whose name was being floated around as a possibility for next year?
No, is that? Who's that?
Chris Caputo.
Oh, okay.
I was reading that who was it? It was Goodman was
Jeff
saying,
Goodman.
Jeff
yeah.
Goodman was saying that.
Okay, all right. Which kind of makes sense, but we'll see. Bill Courtney's been a long time coach too. So, but I was told that he was going to step down before the season started. He didn't, obviously. So, but they got off to such a bad start, and they just lost to Mount St. Mary's. See, Miami shouldn't be losing to Mount St. Mary's. They've lost 8 of 9 games. Their only win in the last 9 games is Presbyterian. So it's been a rough start. They're 4-8. And Coach L just decided, you know what, enough's enough. We'll have to get Coach L on the show. We'll obviously give him a few weeks to kind of, you know, take this all in, and we'll see how much media he does. But we'll have to get him on the show maybe January or February and get his thoughts on all this. But it's totally different. I'll tell you a crazy story. There's a kid, now this is not basketball, this is football, but there's a quarterback from who played at Tulane this past year. He was a freshman. His name's Darian Mensa. Okay, now Darian Mensa, good player, had a pretty good year. I mean, threw 22 touchdowns, let's see, 6 picks, pretty good runner. He's a bigger kid. Tulane ended up playing in the conference championship. They lost to Army. He goes to Duke, all right? And I heard this yesterday. He signed a 2-year deal for $8 million. He's getting $4 million per year at Duke.
I mean, good for the players.
Great for the player. But that's what's crazy about it. The money out there, especially in football. Most people have no idea. If Darian Mensa walked down the street, they would have no idea who Darian Mensa is.
No chance.
But he's going to go out and make... Why would you go try and go pro? Just play in college as long as you can with all the money that's out there. If he's going to make $8 million in the next 2 years, and who knows after that, he's only a freshman.
If you're a coach and you're good at this, you can turn a team around quickly. We're going to have Ed Cooley, Georgetown coach, on at 8:20.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at, I think, 3 of their top 4 scorers,
mm-hmm.
you got Jaden Epps, who's their leading scorer. He didn't start at Georgetown. He started Illinois. He's been at Georgetown the last couple seasons, right?
Yep.
They've got Sorber. All right, he's a freshman. Peavy's their third leading scorer. He didn't start at Georgetown. He started at Texas Tech. Then he went to TCU for 2 seasons, or actually 3 seasons. Now he's at Georgetown. Like, that's the way it is in college basketball now, mm-hmm. that these guys bounce around. That's a guy who's been on 3 teams. And I can't remember, so I did this last night, that their fourth leading scorer is Malik Mack.
Yep.
Really good player. He's from Oxon Hill, local guy, but he went to Harvard.
I know.
I remember you talking about it, like, why would you leave Harvard? Well, Harvard, now he's at Georgetown.
Yep.
And the other part of it is, the part that Larrañaga's talking about is, then you got to try and keep them, because there's going to be other teams offering.
Correct.
So it's not just a matter of bringing them in. You bring them in as freshmen. You bring in your transfer portal guys, then you got to defend your territory and make sure other teams aren't offering more money and that sort of thing.
Well, when we talked to Chris Caputo earlier in the week on Tuesday, and I was asking him about one of his players in particular, and it was Gerald Drumgoole Jr., who is a guard. He actually is having a really good year, too. He's averaging about 13 a game. If you look at Gerald Drumgoole's stats, okay, he started out at Pitt. Played at Pitt for 2 years, okay? I think he got hurt in one of those years. But so he was at Pitt for 2 years. Then he transferred to Albany, went to Albany for 2 years. Then he transferred to Delaware. Okay.
So that's the player. You know what it was? I couldn't remember the players that we had Caputo on. Yeah, he's been on four teams.
Yeah. And then he goes to Delaware for 1 year, and then Caputo goes and gets him at GW. So he's been at Pitt, Albany, Delaware, and now GW. Four teams in 6 years. Crazy.
Let's go to Ashburn. Tommy, you're on with the Junkies. Good morning.
Hey, fellas. Good morning. Hey, I'm the same age as you guys, and we've seen this for the last 30 years. These coaches, Saban, Coach K, no problem collecting professional salaries way, way over some real pros teams. The schools, no problem collecting professional revenue. They ruined it 30 years ago. They saw this coming. They brought money into the game. Pitt now doesn't play Penn State. I'm from Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. That doesn't make any sense. Didn't make any sense 30 years ago when they quit playing each other. You reap what you sow.
Yeah. Oh, look, it's and look, a lot of fans and media look at the reactions of coaches when coaches complain and say, what are you complaining about? You're making stupid money. You know, you're making millions of dollars. Just kind of deal with it. Build a roster. But throw that aside. It's still very difficult. Look, Jim Larranega said the money's not worth it anymore. I'm out. So for some of these coaches, Nick Saban's another example. I mean, he made obviously millions of dollars. I mean, he's filthy rich. But a lot of these coaches say it's not worth it anymore, and they're just bowing out, especially the older coaches.
Yeah, it's stressful.
Yeah.
Could you imagine going to the Final Four and then eight of your guys say they want to leave?
Nope. I couldn't imagine it. And then you got to somehow...
It's like you feel like you built up a program good enough to make the Final Four, and sure, a couple guys might graduate, whatever.
Yep.
But to have, you know, more than half your team decide, hey, I want to go to somewhere else.
Well, that's where the money is.
It's crazy.
You know, I mean, Darian Mensah is not going to stay at Tulane because he's not going to make $4 million a year there.
All right, it is a Football Friday. We're going to be talking some NFL throughout the show, including that riveting game last night on Thursday.
Man, there's been some good ones the last
We can get into
nights.
That next when we open up the Junkie Sports page. But as I mentioned, we're packed with guests. Kevin McCarthy on the movies is 7. A couple good ones, the Bob Dylan movie, Nicole Kidman movie. So we'll get into that coming up at 7 o'clock. We'll talk college football because you've got the quarterfinals coming up. Chris Doering from the SEC Network will join us. John Feinstein at 8. Ed Cooley, Georgetown basketball coach at 8:20.
It's a perfect Friday show, Mr. Valdez.
And Scott Abraham on the Commanders-Falcons game coming up at 9 o'clock. That's all right here on the Junkies.
Hey, y'all, it's Chip Patterson from the Cover 3 podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. College football is about to enter its first ever 12-team playoff era, so join me, along with Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott, as we drop new episodes 5 times a week to close out the year. We've got reactions, bracket breakdowns, and best bets for these matchups with championship stakes. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Go anywhere. Welcome back. Chucky's coming to you live on 106.7 The Fan and the Team 980. We're getting the movies coming up at 7 with Kevin McCarthy, but right now we'll open up the Junkie Sports page.
We kind of talked about it already. Jim Larranega is stepping down as head coach of the Miami Hurricanes. He's been there since 2011, went to the Final Four just a couple years ago.
It was kind of stunning when he left George Mason.
Mm-hmm.
Because he had such a good thing going there, George Mason.
Yep.
And you have to say he had a very successful run at Miami.
Yeah,
he didn't know how it was going to work out. I don't remember the timeline, but when he went to Miami, they were part of the Big East.
Yep.
And now they're ACC. A lot of things changed in college basketball, but he was able to have a consistent, pretty consistent team making it to the tournament and, of course, made that Final Four.
Went to the Elite Eight the year before that. So he went to the Elite Eight and then Final Four in back-to-back years. He had 26 wins and 29 wins. And then the following year, I mean, you already mentioned it, a bunch of guys wanted to leave after the Final Four season. He won 15 games. So he went from 29 to 15 because he lost a bunch of guys. And then this year they were off to a 4-8 start. They've lost 8 of 9 games. They even lost to Mount St. Mary. So he's stepping down. Bill Courtney will take over on an interim level, and Bill Courtney has been a head coach and assistant for many, many years. He played at Bucknell, and his head coaching job at Cornell, he was there for, I don't know, 5 or 6 years, but he was an assistant at a bunch of local schools, so he'll take over on the interim level, so we'll see what happens there. But Jim Larranega is stepping down. 75 years old, he just said, you know what, can't handle the change in collegiate sports anymore. It's just too much.
I'll never forget that run at George Mason. Look, I went to Maryland, undergrad, went to Temple for law school. No association with George Mason other than we worked in Fairfax.
Mm-hmm.
But remember, we did a show from kind of the student union,
mm-hmm.
and just the way that a small campus like that just blew up because of the basketball run, it was awesome to watch. And, you know, he came in studio with the team. We gave him a pep talk. It wasn't the same year that they made it to the Final Four, but we had a really good relationship with Larinaga back then. That's how we got to know Chris Caputo, and mm-hmm. who's now at GW all these years later. But that really was amazing. It was the first time it happened. I mean, it's happened since where these low seeds have made the Final Four, but that was unheard of at the time, and they went through powerhouses.
Correct. And it was fun to watch, man. It was. Yeah, I remember doing that show from the Student Union.
Yeah, it was like crowded, man.
That was nuts.
The student body was on fire.
And that was a night show. That's when we were doing nights. Mm-hmm. I don't think we were doing mornings.
Yeah, I think we were doing mornings.
You sure?
I think it was mornings. Yeah. I'm pretty sure it was mornings.
I mean, we can just confirm the Final Four run was what year?
I thought it was a night show, but yeah, maybe you're right.
I think Mason's run was in 2006.
Yeah, we were mornings. Actually, middays.
That's right, because we started around 2003.
I'm 99% sure it was mornings.
I remember it morning.
Yeah.
Didn't you also hang Billy Packer in effigy?
We did. I can't remember exactly what Billy Packer said, but
yeah, I think he was none too pleased with Mason's run, yeah. or something yeah, along like those lines.
Yeah, he wanted to see the Blue Bloods.
Yes.
There was a Thursday night football game last night. It was a big one for Seattle because they are trying to make the playoffs.
It was a horrible game.
A bad game, man. Seattle wins this one over Chicago 6-3. That's right.
6-3.
Three field goals. Caleb Williams was sacked 7 times. Threw a pick, sacked 7 times.
Now, his pick was on a fourth down at the end of the game. Where he just threw it up for grabs. But I would put at least half these sacks on him.
He does.
I didn't watch it start to finish. I did watch late in the game, and I watched parts of it. It's a tough watch.
Oh, yeah.
The Bears and their statistics in the first half are particularly horrible.
They're horrible, especially in the first quarter, yeah.
First couple of drives, they had third down passes, which weren't perfect, which were dropped.
Mm-hmm.
And these are good receivers, or they should be, in Keenan Allen and Odunze.
Yep.
I think they had drops. But I don't know if guys aren't open. He doesn't pull the trigger fast enough.
He's very hesitant.
He'll make spectacular plays. I think he had one last night where he was rolling to the left and kind of threw this amazing pass.
Mm-hmm.
It was negated by a holding penalty. Could have been a touchdown, but he holds on to the ball a lot. I don't know how you, I mean, I would imagine he's being coached that constantly, like, hey, you know, after like 3 seconds, you got to get rid of it. But I don't know.
It could be instinctive.
Like, you very rarely get that shot from like the quarterback's perspective to see if guys are open downfield. You've got a guy who was the quarterback's coach, who was elevated to play caller, who was then elevated to head coach.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe Matt Eberflus wasn't that bad because it's just gotten even worse.
He was bad. But the entire staff is certainly not helping Caleb Williams. But like you said, he does hold on to the ball a lot. He did that in college too. He did hold the ball. Now, he was able to get out of trouble more in college because he was just that much better than the guys that were coming after him. And he could get the ball downfield. But he's been sacked 67 times. 67.
How many times was David Carr sacked that one year? Wasn't that the record?
You'd have to check on that. The next highest is C.J. Stroud at 52. So he's been sacked 15 more times than C.J. Stroud in equivalent games. That's just a ton.
So David Carr was sacked 76 times during his rookie season with the Texans. Sam Howell crept up on it.
All right, well, he's probably not going to break the record.
Sam Howell last season was 65.
Yeah, that's just a ton. Just think about all those places.
Yeah, that's just too many hits. They got to get the right coach. You wonder if Ben Johnson, that's the name that's floated around a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Detroit offensive coordinator, if he sees enough in Caleb that he would make that move. I mean, he definitely has, like, his throwing potential. You know, when we did our boards, I had Caleb number one because he does make incredible throws at times.
Yeah. No, he does. But he needs, first of all, he needs confidence. He needs a better offensive line. They definitely need to go out and get offensive linemen. And they just need a better structure, coaching staff, because you just watch them and they're just completely lost in the first half.
And the other side of the equation, The other side of the equation is Seattle has a chance of making the playoffs.
Yes. All right?
They flashed stats last night where I think they're at about a 16% probability and the Rams are 84% probability.
Mm-hmm.
If they make the playoffs, they're so bad too. They only scored 6 points.
Well, let's see.
Like, I get it. The Bears have lost 10 in a row.
Mm-hmm.
They are an abomination. The Seahawks are a potential playoff team. And that's all they got?
I don't think they'll make it, but yes, they are potential.
And
they're
they
not
have
out of
talent
it
at wide receiver.
Yeah.
I mean, I think JSN has emerged as their best receiver.
Yeah, what did
and
he do last night?
And then you got Metcalf
night?
And Lockett. And I know it was raining last night, but it was terrible.
Metcalf had 3 catches. JSN had 3 catches. You know, they didn't do anything in the passing game, neither team. But yet you're right. I mean, the weather wasn't great. But I'm sorry. You should be able to score more than 9 points in a game, even if it's raining like that. But the
it was 0-0 in the second half.
Yeah, it was
6-3 at the half.
It was awful. So the Rams, who of course lead the NFC West right now, they could have gotten in if Seattle lost last night and they play Arizona this weekend. They can also get in if they win, and the Rams would clinch strength of victory tiebreaker because they would have the same record in the division. And
it's like the fourth tiebreaker,
and then it would come down to strength of victory. So in order for that to happen, the Rams would need 3.5 or more wins from 6 teams this week. So they would need the Vikings, the Bills, the 49ers, the Commanders, the Bengals, the Browns. All right, they would need 4 of those 6 teams to win if they ended up tied with Seattle. It's kind of crazy. It's kind of confusing. But there's still a small chance that Seattle could get in. I don't think they will because I don't think the Rams are going to lose to Arizona, honestly.
So JSN this year, 96 catches, 1,100 yards, 6 touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
DK Metcalf with 63 catches and Tyler Lockett with 47. So JSN's emerged as their number one.
Yeah, he's having a good time. Metcalf's had some lingering injuries for mm-hmm. for the year, but you're right. He has been their number one the last few weeks. All right, so with the Commanders, I know we'll get into it later, but they still have some guys who are on the injured list, if you want to put it that way, because they are missing practice. Marshawn Lattimore did not practice yesterday.
I wouldn't expect him to play.
It doesn't look good. I mean,
got to get him right for the playoffs.
But, you know, you figure you need him against Atlanta, especially if Drake London's going to play. Now, Drake London hurt his hamstring last week. His coach, Raheem Morris, said he could have gone back in the game, and he was limited in practice yesterday. So we'll talk more about that. But for Philadelphia, Jalen Hurts is still in concussion protocol, so he has not practiced all week. Kenny Pickett is taking first-team reps for Philadelphia. You know, I know there are a certain amount of fans out there that think that there's still a possibility for Washington to win the division. I think it's almost impossible because even if Hurts was out for the rest of the regular season, I just don't see them, even with Kenny Pickett, losing to the Giants. I don't see it.
And they have a soft landing spot after the Giants game too, right?
Oh, no, they play the Cowboys this week, and then they play the Giants in week 18. So, but
so
they would
Cowboys
have to,
and Giants.
They would have to lose both of those.
Yeah.
And I think if maybe they sit Hurts out this week against Dallas, and maybe they can get by Dallas with Kenny Pickett. Even if they didn't, I would assume Hurts would be back to win, trying to win the division against the Giants. Just my opinion on that. But anyway, so Hurts is still in concussion protocol. We were talking about the Netflix numbers yesterday. Kind of crazy here. Netflix apparently set records for the most streamed NFL games in U.S. history, while the NBA had its best holiday numbers in 5 years, according to Nielsen. The NFL and Nielsen said 65 million U.S. viewers tuned in for at least 1 minute to watch one of the NFL games. And it doesn't matter how long you watch it.
Well, it does matter.
Not really.
For the advertisers.
Well, that's fine, but they've already... Yes. You're just getting the purchases, and the advertisers are already paying.
Yeah.
So...
The average numbers, I know you have that total numbers at 65 million, but the average viewers for the Netflix games was right around 25 million. And
that was
the NBA
average,
average was right around 5 million, which was great for them.
Yep.
So those are the people that don't have Netflix, I guess, or they love the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
But I just retweeted this. So the poll that we had up about the NBA was on there for 24 hours. It got roughly 3,000 votes.
Mm-hmm.
If you combined... the amount of people that said they watched only the NBA, which was 3%, and the amount of people that said they watched some NBA and some NFL, which was 9%, that's 12% that watched the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
88% watched zero NBA. That's a major problem. I mean, we talked about it yesterday. There's so many reasons. So many people were hitting us up on social media. I mean, hundreds of comments from the three-pointers to... the players all being friends, no rivalries anymore.
A lot of international
woke
players.
Policies, whatever. People seem to be out on the NBA.
Mm-hmm. But they were watching it apparently on Christmas Day.
A little bit.
5.5 million or 5.25 million.
You know, Mike Maher, you're younger. Did you watch any NBA on Christmas Day?
I watched a little bit of the Celtics 76ers game.
Because that's before the NFL started.
Exactly. And then other than that, not a single minute. Yeah. Or just locked in on Netflix.
It's a problem. It's a problem for the NBA.
And think about it on Netflix. Once you're logged in and you're watching on Netflix, you can't like flip the channel.
Yeah,
you can't check in on the game.
I said yesterday. It's tedious. I mean, you can do it. It would take me about, I don't know, 5 seconds. I'm going to hit the home button. I got to click over to YouTube TV, which what I have, and then you got to find the channel.
You got to put it on, and then hopefully it's not a commercial.
Right. Then you got to go back to Netflix.
Yeah. There's no like one button you can hit like any other game that you're flipping back and forth from.
It's definitely a factor, but I think the biggest factor is a lot of people have lost interest in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
Were you an NBA fan at one point?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So I'm guessing your fandom has gone down.
Yeah, the Wizards also have an impact on that, just being asked.
You know, a lot
for
of people
of
said
years,
that, too. I noticed that on social media, that they were saying, you know, since Wizards aren't as good. So I'm more of a global NBA fan. So
if you think Goodell isn't going to smash the NBA next season, especially after LeBron goes on his post game and says the Christmas is for the NBA, you think he's not going to put like the Cowboys on Christmas Day, or the Steelers again on Christmas Day?
Well, it depends what day.
Or these big market teams.
Does it depend on what day Christmas falls
on? It'll
be
on Thursday.
Yeah.
Okay, so that works out. Because if it falls on a Monday or Tuesday.
Or put three games. Yeah. Have a 12 o'clock, a 4:30.
Just like Thanksgiving.
Yeah, just like Thanksgiving. And then a night game.
Well, it's 100% they'll do that.
I would bet any amount of money that Goodell's going to put three games on Christmas
Day. Triple header, yeah.
On a Thursday.
Yeah. I would agree. Speaking of the Wizards, they beat the Hornets again.
They own Charlotte.
They beat them 113-110 last night. Of course, they just played the Hornets at home last Friday night. No, I'm sorry, Thursday night. And
LaMelo had 31, but Jordan Poole hit a game winner.
They win 113-110. So LaMelo Ball in the last two games against the Wizards in Washington is 7 for 31 from threes.
Not good.
Because he was 3 for 18 last Thursday, and he was 4 for 13 last night.
Well, also, the thing which jumps out at me, did he have 27 shots last night?
He took 27, yeah.
I think maybe he had almost 30 in the first game.
Yeah, he just jacks
them up. He's basically taken 60 shots in two games against the Wizards.
I mean, they're 7 and 23. The Wiz improved to 5 and 23. To lead the Wiz, like you mentioned, it was Jordy Poole, 25. Sarr had 15. Koulibaly had 20. Koulibaly's put up a couple. Since we were killing Koulibaly, I don't know, a couple weeks ago with cakes, he's put up a couple of decent games.
He's all right. He's averaging 13 this season.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you'll take that. And then guys off the bench, Kispert had 13, and Brogdon had 11. So that's a win, 5-23 over the Hornets. We were talking about Luka yesterday. He's going to be out a month, okay, with that calf strain. So we're probably going to lose that Dallas Mavericks total. I'm pretty sure we're going to lose that. And last but not least, DeSean Jackson, former receiver in the NFL,
surprised me.
Is going to be the head football coach at Delaware State.
Nice.
Also in the same conference as Norfolk State in the MEAC, where Michael Vick was just hired. So,
that's where a guy Darnarian McCants went to.
Correct. So DeSean Jackson will be the head coach at Delaware State. Michael Vick will be the head coach at Norfolk State, and they'll be in the same conference.
Have to take a break. If you want to chime in throughout the show, you can always hit us up on the MGM National Harbor listener line. It's at 800-636-1067. Same number on the Thompson Windows text machine. Standard message and data charge may apply. You can hit us up on X at Junks Radio. He's coming up at 7 o'clock. Hit the Skins is brought to you by Don't Sleep Energy. You need to hit the Skins right now. Grab a Don't Sleep Energy shot. Need to stay ready all day just in case. Sip in a refreshing 12-ounce can. You can grab both right now. Don'tSleepEnergy.com. Use the promo code Junkies. You get 10% off. And remember, don't sleep makes you great. Game, of course, flexed to Sunday Night Football. Commanders host the Atlanta Falcons, who, of course, made a quarterback shift a week ago. Michael Penix Jr. has taken over.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at kind of a comparison of the offenses, Commanders right now have the fourth-ranked offense in the NFL. They're averaging 28.8 points per game. Falcons kind of a middle-of-the-pack offense, but, of course, with the shift, we'll see how they play with Michael Penix Jr. under center.
Mm-hmm.
They average just 21.8 points per game. But their passing offense is ranked sixth in the NFL. And that was with Kirky.
That was with Kirk having a bad year. Yeah. Well, they also have a really good
running
back.
And there's really not that much difference in terms of yards per game.
Yeah.
Like, Commanders are fifth, averaging 373 yards per game. Falcons, 13 yards behind them at 360.9 yards per game.
Yeah. Cousins was just having trouble, you know, executing touchdowns in the red zone. He was throwing picks instead of throwing touchdowns. But Bijan Robinson's having a pretty good year. I mean, really good year if you factor in, you know, the fact that he can catch balls as well. So he's got almost 1,200 rushing yards, and he's got 10 touchdowns. And then in the passing game, they like to throw to him. He's got 56 catches for 420 yards and a touchdown. So he's got 11 touchdowns.
And then if you look at the defense, Commanders have a slight edge. They're ranked 10th. This is in yardage. Falcons are 14th. But the Falcons have a pretty good rush defense. And besides Jaden Daniels, we've been talking about it, they've been struggling running the football. Falcons right now are 11th in the league stopping the run. Commanders are 29th.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think
they'll have a tall task stopping Bijan.
I think Bijan's going to be a major factor in the game. It'll be interesting to see if the Falcons are much better in the red zone than they had been under Cousins. But, you know, Lattimore being out, I assume he's going to be out. I mean, that's pretty big because that just means St. Juice is going to play more.
Speaking of Lattimore, it is time for the Commanders' injury report. He was a DNP for the practice yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
But there is some good news on the injury front, as defensive tackle Jonathan Allen was a full participant and told reporters he's preparing as if he's playing for Sunday night's game.
Have they told you that you're going to play Sunday, or is there any doubt in your mind? Or have they told you that?
To my knowledge, it is, but I don't want to speak for them. Obviously, we'll see moving forward. I'm preparing as if I'm playing, so, you know, we'll go from there.
It's a possibility.
It's big, man, Tad. And depth.
If you don't see him this week, then I'm guessing you'll definitely see him against Dallas.
Injury report presented by Centers for Advanced Orthopedics. More physicians, more locations, more advanced care centered around one thing. You visit CFAOrtho.com. That adds depth. You know, Joe Witt and Cliff Kingsbury have their pressers. And Joe Witt, the defensive coordinator, was talking about kind of a surprise player on the defensive line. And he was hyping up Sheldon Day.
Hmm.
The defensive tackle, what he said in the presser was consistency. He was a guy that when he did his workout, I was like, okay, he's a little small. And I like big guys.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like a bunch of little guys. But he plays thick and heavy, and he's right where he needs to be. So, you know, adding Jonathan Allen to the mix, obviously, former Pro Bowler. We love John Allen. The good thing is that now they've got a couple guys that maybe they weren't counting on before, like a Sheldon Day. You've gotten to see more of Johnny Newton. that maybe you've got a better rotation now.
Well, that was the concern once Jonathan Allen went down, but and there was some issues in the first few weeks after that, but I think they're playing much better. But again, we just mentioned it. They're going to have to face Bijan. Bijan is going to get the ball a lot this weekend. I truly believe it. Is there a segment of Commander fans that are slightly worried about this game? Mike Moore is a big Commander fan. Are you slightly worried about this game?
I actually am. I mentioned to a buddy last week that I was more confident in the Eagles game than I am this Falcons game, just because, you know, they looked so good the last couple weeks. And the game got flexed to prime time. Yeah. I don't know. I just don't like it. I mean, I still think we're going to win, but I think it's going to be a lot closer than people think.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if there's fans out there that are worried about not just this game, which means you would lose the head-to-head tiebreaker with the Falcons, but then you'd have to win the Dallas game in Week 18 in Dallas, because I don't think Tampa's losing, and Tampa already has the tiebreaker. So
just based on their schedule.
Based on the schedules, if you lose to Atlanta – would have the tiebreaker, and Tampa already has the tiebreaker. So Atlanta and Tampa would have to win out, and then if Washington lost both games, they're out.
Look, the Commanders won three in a row, but if you break down the three games, you beat a bad Titans team.
Mm-hmm.
You
a terrible
win
Saints
by
team.
1 point against the Saints, comes down to that two-point conversion, and then you win against the Eagles, which should be impressive, but you got no Jalen Hurts in that game. You still have to make plays.
Yeah.
Credit the Commanders' offense, because nobody did what the Commanders did to that Philadelphia defense all season long. Mm-hmm. Nobody's done that. Nobody's mm-hmm. thrown five touchdown passes against that defense.
Right.
I mean, that was uber impressive, and they did that with five turnovers.
Correct.
But the game was a little different, so
it would be crushing if the Commanders missed out on the playoffs based on the scenarios leading up to this week.
Yes.
Crushing.
Yes. Yes. I don't know
but
if
it's
it
still
would be
possible.
Crushing if you lose to the Falcons, because then you just got
to beat
Dallas Cowboys.
But I think it would be a little bit more difficult considering the pressure going on the road to play Dallas as opposed to winning here at home against a rookie quarterback.
It's not a gimme.
No, it's not a gimme.
But you're at home, Sunday Night Football, the fans are going to be with you. There's not some huge Atlanta fan base.
No.
It should be, I'll say, 90% Commanders fans there.
Yeah.
The place should be raucous.
Should be a big one. I think Washington will win the game, but a part of me says, you know, we just don't know what Penix brings, because no one watched Penix last week against mm-hmm. the Giants, and again, it was the Giants. So
all the analytics people said that he played really, really well.
Correct. So that's the thing that would alarm me a little bit.
800-636-1067 is the number. A little bit later in the show, we have our Junkies Weekend Parlay,
mm-hmm.
our Touchdown Parlay. That's going to come up at 7:45, and we will give you our picks. We are packed. Coming up next, we'll talk some movies. Kevin McCarthy joins us from Fox 5.